Welcome to today's Journal Club webinar, the final webinar in our series this spring on research methods. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm happy to welcome you to today's session. Housekeeping to get us started, please look in the GoToWebinar tool panel and you'll see the handout for today's presentation that you can download and follow along. We will take questions at the end of the presentation, so please type those in the question block so they can be moderated to our presenter. And then when I close the webinar today, there'll be a short survey. Appreciate your feedback on this session, as well as ideas for future journal clubs. We are thinking about what topics to cover in the fall, so any suggestions are welcome. And then watch for an email by the end of the week with a link to the recording, the handout, as well as the CEU certificate that you're earning for your attendance. So I want to introduce our moderator. Dr. Kristen DiFilippo is assistant teaching professor at the University of Illinois.
Thanks, Rachel. Today I get to introduce our speaker. Dr. Gaston Ares is a food engineer. He received his PhD in chemistry with a focus on sensory and consumer science from Universidad de la República Uruguay. He leads an interdisciplinary research group specialized in consumer behavior, particularly in consumer reaction towards public policies targeted at achieving healthier eating habits. He has authored more than 300 articles in international refereed journals. In 2011, he won the Food Quality and Preference Award for a Young Researcher for his contributions to sensory and consumer science. He is associated with Appetite Journal of Sensory Studies, and he is a member of the Nutrition Guidance Expert Advisory Group subgroup on policy actions of the World Health Organization. Today, he's going to be talking to us about interpretation of external validity, and I want to thank Dr. Ares for being here with us, and at this point, I can pass it over to him.
Thank you, Rachel, and thank you, Kristen, for the invitation to share part of our research and our experience on one specific topic and to use that experience to discuss this important aspect of our research that is related to quality. That is, in fact, one of the most important things that we want to assure when we conduct any type of research. So those are some of the nutrition educator competencies that will be involved in the presentation. You will see that we will discuss different things related to both methodological aspects and different topics that relate to those competencies. So as Kristen introduced, the presentation will focus around one specific aspect of quality that is very important, particularly when we work in the development of public policies or communication campaigns, that is related to validity. That is one of the most critical aspects of the quality of research. So validity basically refers to whether results are correctly interpreted understood. So it means that we need to be sure that the claims that we are making based on the research that we conducted is valid, and that means that it's well-founded. So validity has different constructs within, so we can discuss very different aspects of validity that determine the extent to which our results can be translated to other settings, to other populations, or whether results can be replicated or not, or what are the different types of bias that can make that our results may not be confirmed by other researchers. So these are some of the different types of validity that can be discussed when we talk about a specific research that involves both what we call internal validity. That means if the inferences that we are making are warranted based on the results that we have, ecological validity that relates to the correspondence between the specific setup where we collect our data and what happens in real life, and so on. So we need to assure that these different types of validity are reached when we have a specific study. And in this specific presentation, I will try to focus on external validity in particular. So this is one of the definitions that you can find for external validity that says that it is the degree to which the relations among variables observed in one sample of observations in one population will hold to other samples of observations within the same population or in other populations. So basically, external validity is related to the extent to which the results can be generalized to other populations and other settings. So it's, as I was saying before, it's very important when we are working with policy making, because we want to be sure that the results and the conclusions that we reach in a specific study are generalized, for example, to the target population of that specific policy or to other settings. So when we discuss external validity, we need to take into account the specific type of study that we are conducting. It's very different, the discussion about validity or, and specifically external validity, when we talk about the quantitative studies or when we talk about qualitative studies. So that's one of the first things that we need to have in mind. What is the type of research that we are conducting? And in order to be sure that we manage to ensure the external validity of the findings and the results that we are trying to reach. So one of the things that we need to be aware of is that there are many threats to external validity. And one of the sources of those threats is the researcher. That means that we as researchers determine the extent to which the results of our study or our specific research will have external validity or not. And when we talk about all the stages that are involved from the conceptualization of a study to the interpretation of the results, we can try to think of different ways in which we can ensure the external validity of the data. And of course, when we go to the interpretation of the results, how we can check and discuss whether those results have external validity or not. So in the rest of the presentation, what I will do is to share our experience on how we handle external validity in one specific study that is published in this paper from the Journal of Nutrition Education and Behavior, that it's entitled Uruguayan Citizens' Perception of Messages to Promote Healthy Eating Through the Use of Nutritional Warnings. So I will give you a little bit of background on why we conducted this specific study and how we managed these different aspects of external validity through the different stages of the research process related to this specific study. So this study is related to what we call nutritional warnings, that can be defined as any sign that is located on the front of package of products with excessive content of nutrients associated with non-communicable diseases. So basically, nutritional warnings are one specific type of front of package nutrition information that is gaining relevance and popularity in Latin America. So nutritional warnings have been implemented now in five different countries in Latin America. So Chile was the pioneer of this policy. So they developed this idea of highlighting products high in sugar, saturated fat, sodium, and calories as a strategy to discourage consumption of such products and therefore contribute to to tackle obesity and non-communicable diseases. So please take in mind that have in mind that Chile is the country in Latin America with the highest prevalence of obesity and overweight. So after Chile, this front of package nutrition labeling scheme gained popularity. So the second country to adopt this scheme was Peru. in 2016. And then Uruguay was the third country to implement this policy. So Uruguay implemented nutritional warnings in 2000, so approved the implementation of nutritional warnings in 2018. And after Uruguay, the next country was Mexico, and last year, Brazil approved the implementation of nutritional warnings, and they will enter into force in a couple of years, so in 2022. So one of the things with these warnings is that they are quite new in when we discuss the different policies that have been implemented in different countries worldwide. So there is not much knowledge about how we can motivate people to use this specific information in their decision-making process. So when we talk about the specific case of Uruguay, so I will give you a little bit of context on Uruguay. There you have where Uruguay is located, if you're not familiar with Latin America. So Uruguay is a quite small country. It's categorized as a high-income country in South America. It's located between two very big countries, that is Argentina and Brazil. So we are quite small. We have 3.5 million people. And we are characterized by a high prevalence of obesity and overweight. So according to the last available data, the prevalence of overweight and obesity among adults is approximately 64%. And among children, school-aged children, it's 40%. So we are in general the second country after Chile in prevalence of overweight and obesity. And one of the factors that has been associated with the increase in the prevalence of overweight and obesity is the rapid growth in the consumption of ultra-processed products with excessive or high content of sugar, fat, and sodium. So one of the main characteristics of the whole Latin American context is that in 2002-2004, in that period of time, Latin America faced a very important economic recession. And once the economic growth was reestablished, when people started to increase their income, we started to see an increase in the consumption of those specific products. So there are many, many countries in Latin America that are trying to develop strategies and public policies to reduce consumption of such products. So in the Uruguayan context, one of the strategies that has been implemented is front of pack nutrition labeling. So the process in Uruguay started in 2016, when the government created an intersectoral working group to develop a policy that facilitates the identification of products with excessive content of sugar, fat, and sodium. So after 2 years that involved a large number of studies conducted in the country to inform the design of the policy, Uruguay approved in August 2018 the regulation. There is a decree that specified that products, packaged products with excessive content, according to a flexibilization of the nutrient profile model of the Pan American Health Organization, should feature those octagonal signs on the front package. And the regulation granted an 18-month period to the food industry to adapt to the regulation. So the entry into force of the regulation was defined in March 2020. So during this 18-month period from August 2018 to March 2020, Uruguay worked in the implementation of the regulation. So that implementation from the governmental point of view involved changes in the administrative procedures that are involved when products are registered to be commercialized in the country, guidelines on how to implement those warnings on the packages and so on. And one of the things that received attention was the development of a communication campaign to motivate the use of nutritional warnings in decision making. So how we could motivate people to effectively use those warnings once they were implemented on the packages. So what we did was to conduct a project that was funded by UNICEF that involved the co-creation of a communication campaign. So this involved involving the regular citizens in the definition of the contents of that communication campaign. So we relied on this co-creation approach, thinking that the insights that we could gain from regular citizens could be more innovative or useful than those gathered just with experts. And we also based this decision on the increasing use of these co-creation approaches in different aspects of the development of products or development of services or communication campaigns that talk about the efficacy of that type of approach to really identify what motivates people to, in this case, change their behavior. So the important thing about our research is that results would serve as a guide to develop this communication campaign. So in fact, external validity was a key point because we wanted to be sure that we in fact selected the contents that would motivate people to modify the behavior and in this case, take into account the warnings when making their purchase decisions at the supermarket. So the project involved a series of stages. So one of the things that we said was, okay, if we want to be sure that we are making a correct choice on the contents of this communication campaign, we need to conduct multiple studies. So these multiple studies would provide insights that would sequentially be used in the following steps. But also we thought that this approach would serve to be sure or to ensure or guarantee the external validity of our findings. So it was a kind of replication of the studies that we could perform in each of these steps. So we could check if the different insights gained in one of the studies in fact could replicate in the following studies. So the first thing that we did was to generate ideas. So we asked citizens to provide ideas on how we could motivate Uruguayan people to take into account the warnings in decision making, the type of images that should be included in a communication campaign, and also to provide phrases that they thought would be useful to motivate people to change their behavior. Then we did a selection of potential ideas that was researcher based, and then we conducted a second study to select those ideas based on citizens' perception. Based on the ideas that citizens selected, we proceeded to the development of graphic pieces, and then we evaluated those graphic pieces. So the project involved three main studies, and I will talk about the second step. So the second study of this process, that's the paper that I mentioned before. So the objective of our specific study was to explore the specific type of messages people consider most appropriate as part of a communication campaign aimed to promote healthy eating in the context of the implementation of nutritional warnings in Uruguay. So that was our main objective, just to select different types of messages that could encourage people to change their eating behavior. So as I previously mentioned, we handled or we took into account external validity in the different stages of the research process, from the conceptualization to the interpretation of the results. So I will now share what we did in each of these stages to ensure or to contribute to a larger external validity, and then how we interpret or how we discuss our results taking into account external validity. So the first thing was related to the conceptualization of our study. And one of the things that we did to be able to compare our results with previous studies and basically to explain our results was to rely on a theoretical framework. So we, from the beginning, even though we were conducting an exploratory study, we decided to select a specific theoretical framework for the development of the research. So we based our studies on the theoretical framework proposed by the health belief model. So we hypothesized that the ability of nutritional warnings to trigger behavior change depends on the perceived benefits of, in this case, for example, avoiding products with nutritional warnings, and the perceived susceptibility and severity of the consequences. That means, what are the perceived consequences of, for example, consuming products with nutritional warnings? So that was our basic idea. So our hypothesis was that we could motivate consumers to engage or to take into account nutritional warnings if we increased the perceived benefits of that specific action, taking nutritional warnings into account, or if we increased the perceived severity of the consequences of, in this case, not taking into account the warnings and consuming products with excessive content of sugar, fat, and sodium. And also the other construct that we considered was self-efficacy. So how consumers thought that these specific warnings could increase their ability to specifically identify, for example, products with high content of sugar, fat, and sodium, or to engage in healthier eating behaviors. So that was our first step. Then when we were taking into account the experimental design, we decided to rely on a mixed methods design consisting of a first quantitative stage and then a qualitative stage to explain the findings. So we worked with a set of messages that were proposed by citizens in our first study, and we wanted to answer two different questions. What type of messages are preferred by Uruguayan citizens? And the second question was why? So we considered that having this explanatory question could, of course, enable us to explain the results and also could potentially contribute to the external validity of the findings by enabling a potential explanation again, and to check if that explanation was aligned with our theoretical framework, for example. The other thing that we did was to rely on what we call a within subjects experimental design. So we exposed the same group of participants to different types of messages. So in our first study, we identified three main types of messages that citizens suggested as potential promoters of behavior change, or that could encourage people to use nutritional warnings. A first group of messages was related to the promotion of informed food choices, so stressing the contribution of warnings to informed decision making. A second group of messages was related to the negative consequences of excessive consumption of sugar, fat, and sodium. There you can see all the potential messages that we identified in the first study. Of course, these messages are a result of a selection that we performed. And then a third group was related to the health benefits of avoiding excessive consumption of sugar, fat, and sodium. So what we did was to present each of these sets of messages separately, and we asked participants to select the one they could see the most appropriate for promoting informed food choices or for making consumers aware of the negative health consequences and so on. And one of the things that we took into account at this specific stage was that in the experimental design, we needed to have a randomized presentation of the messages. Otherwise, we would have a problem in this case with internal validity, in the sense that participants could select just, for example, the first message on the list and not the message they would consider as most appropriate. So that was one of the things that we did. And then recruitment was a key stage because we wanted to have a diverse set of participants. So this is an important thing because in this specific study, we decided not to have a representative sample of participants. So our emphasis was on the diversity of participants. So we wanted to include participants with diverse characteristics in terms of gender, age, socioeconomic status, educational level. So those were our main points and our main interests. So given a series of constraints related to the budget and to the time frame, we decided to rely on social media recruitment. And this is, it could be considered quite a debatable some questions could be raised on whether we could in fact recruit this diverse set of participants using social media. So what we did was to use some of the recommendations that have been provided for best practice related to the use of online service that involve a series of questions that you should answer yes and no. So is it desirable that data collection to be completed quickly and efficiently? Is your sample size and geographically large and geographically dispersed? Does your study require the use of multimedia stimuli and so on? So after answering those questions, we reached the conclusion that in fact, social media would be a good methodological choice for this specific study. But then the other key point that we took into account was internet and social media use in Uruguay. So in order to be able to in fact recruit a diverse set of participants, we needed internet to be quite popular among the Uruguayan population. And there you can see the percentage of Uruguayan people that has internet access. So 95% of the Uruguayan population has access to internet, and 86% has broadband. So they don't only access internet in their cell phones, but also at home through broadband. And the other thing is related to the percentage of people that use different types of social media. So Facebook is used approximately by 80% of the Uruguayan population, and Instagram is used by 50% of the population. So in fact, social media gets a very good coverage of the Uruguayan population. And then the other approach that we used to increase our external validity was to rely on multiple platforms. So we use both Facebook and Instagram to recruit participants. So in this case, you can see the distribution of users, Facebook users in this case, according to age and the income quantile. And you can see that it's pretty more or less distributed, but when you compare it with Instagram, you can see that the profile of people is a little bit different. So we use these two platforms to be able to capture or to recruit different types of participants, and again contribute to this idea that we would get diverse set of participants. So the other thing that we did to increase our external validity was to recruit participants using an advertisement. So we didn't post an advertisement on the social media pages of the university or so on. We paid for an advertisement. So that means that people would see these advertisements that you can see over there, or when they access Facebook or Instagram. And one of the things that we did was to use a very vague description of the objective. So in order not to have people only interested in food or in nutrition as participants, then we monitored how many people we were recruiting, and we changed the target population of the advertisement. So in general, females are the ones that more easily answer to this type of advertisements, whereas males are always not so keen on joining this study. So we changed the targeting of the advertisement to specifically target those specific segments of the population that we needed to recruit. And the other thing that we did was to use an incentive. So we provided people the possibility of entering a raffle for a voucher in order, again, to motivate people that would be not so interested in food and nutrition. So that were our approaches to increase the external validity of our findings in the recruitment stage. So this is our final sample. So we reached approximately 37,000 of people in the social media, but of course we don't know if they actually read the advertisement. So we just know the percentage of people that just were presented with this advertisement according to the software of the social media. So we know how many people clicked on the advertisement. That was 2,000 approximately, and approximately 860 completed the study. So we thought results were quite positive. It's quite common that in social media research, you get a lot of people that start the study and then don't finish it. But what's interesting is to see that from the ones that click on the advertisement, it's something like 40% actually finish it. And we need to take into account that from the people that click on the advertisement, many of those don't even start the study. They just read the description in the informed consent and just quit. So that we think that that's quite a good result. And there you can see in the table the comparison of the percentage of, so the distribution of our sample and the distribution of the Uruguayan population. You can see that we in fact got a heterogeneous sample of participants. And of course, it did not represent the Uruguayan population as we expected. So we somehow overrepresented female participants a little bit. We had 76% of females compared to 52% in the Uruguayan population. And the other thing was education level. We underrepresented people with very low education level, but still we had 20% of those participants. So the next step was related to the data collection. And in this specific stage, we were interested in the minimization of response bias. So we didn't want participants to provide socially desirable responses. So what we did was to rely on one approach that has been recommended by projective techniques that come from psychology. So we asked participants to respond about how they would motivate other people and not how they would be motivated. So those are the wordings of the questions that we used. So if you were designing a communication campaign, which of the following phrases would be more appropriate to motivate the Uruguayan population and so on. So we frame the questions thinking about other people in this idea that participants would project the inner thoughts and feelings to others when to the responses when answering these specific questions. And the other thing that we did, as I told you before, was to randomize their response options. When we go to the data analysis, in this case, we had both quantitative and qualitative data. So quantitative data was related to the frequency of selection of the different types of messages. And the qualitative data was related to the why, so the reasons why people selected one specific message. And for improving the external validity of our findings, we relied on content analysis performed not just by one researcher, but in this case, we had two researchers independently coding the responses and then sharing their views and reaching a consensus and agreement between them to assure that we could obtain different the same results if we repeat this procedure with different researchers, of course. So we, in this case, ended up with a series of categories that were decided by a discussion between these two researchers. So that's something very important when we work with qualitative data, how to minimize the impact of subjectivity when we analyze this type of responses. So when we go to the interpretation of the results, as I was saying, we relied on the theoretical framework that we had used to conceptualize the study. So we tried to explain our results using the health belief model in this case. So trying to understand if those responses made sense in the light of this specific theory, and in fact, they did. So we found that participants particularly selected messages that emphasize like this increase in self-efficacy or the perceived susceptibility to, for example, non-communicable diseases. So for us, these specific results made sense in the light of this specific theoretical framework that we had selected. Then the other thing that we did was to compare our results with previous studies, both the study that we had conducted about nutritional warnings, trying to understand how people would be motivated to use them and how and why they would use them, as well as other studies related to, for example, message framing. So we used those comparisons to discuss the validity of our findings in that specific case. And the other thing was related to the idea of replication. So we compare, for example, the percentage of participants that preferred messages stressing the negative health consequences of products with high content in sugar, fat, and sodium in this study compared to the previous one that we had conducted. And also, as we conducted a third study, we could also compare again the results from that third study with this one. So we had this idea of replication, not exactly by repeating the same study, but to, by using different studies to contribute to the same research question. So of course, our study is not free of limitations. So the first limitation is that we work with a limited number of messages, so we didn't select a very large number of messages. We did that specific comparison. So of course we could have lost specific aspects of messages that would contribute to motivate people to take these warnings into account. Then we focus on self-reported perception and not necessarily on behavior change. So that's a very important difference. But again, we in other studies relied on other measurements to contribute to this idea. And then in this specific case, we did not assess differences among groups of citizens. So we just analyzed the data considering the sample as a whole. We did not analyze difference, for example, among age groups or socioeconomic levels. But again, as this was part of a series of studies, we left the comparison among groups of citizens for the last specific study. So these are the next steps that we followed after this study related to the selection of ideas for this communication campaign. So we developed some draft graphic pieces, and then we evaluated the graphic pieces using, in this case, a quantitative approach followed by a qualitative approach to try to gather more insights on the reasons underlying what people's decision to select one message or the other. So we work again with these three types of messages, for example, the promotion of informed food choices, raising awareness of the negative health consequences, and emphasis on positive aspects of healthy eating. And the text that we included within each of these graphic pieces was decided based on the results of this specific study that I shared with you. So the third study was built on the basis of the result of the second study, and the second study based on the results of the first study. And of course, we got very similar results in all the studies. So we were pretty happy about that specific aspect of our external validity. So in the third study, the type of message that people preferred was related to the emphasis on positive aspects of healthy eating, for example. So just to end, some final considerations that I think that are relevant for all of us, that of course external validity should be a key consideration from the conceptualization of the study to the interpretation of the results, and of course that we as researchers can be involved in several strategies to contribute to improve the external validity of the findings, and that should be a key consideration in our research. And of course, the reliance on a strong theoretical background and comparison with previous studies, of course, contribute to acknowledging the external validity of the research when we are interpreting and discussing the results. So that was all. Thank you very much for your attention and for the invitation to share this specific experience.
Thank you so much for sharing with us today. I really appreciate it. If anyone has any questions, you can put those into the question box now. It's so fascinating to learn about a process this way. And I also thank you for going back to those final thoughts on external validity. If someone were to be embarking on a new project and they wanted to make sure they were ensuring external validity from conceptualization all the way through, what one piece of advice would you give to someone getting ready to design a new project?
Yeah, I think that it's as my final thoughts were, it's like related to this using a theoretical framework. So be sure what is the theoretical framework that you will use to explain your results and to conceptualize your study, and then that's a key point, because if you have what the theory says, so it's quite easy to explain your results and to discuss the external validity. Of course, that it can happen that the theoretical framework then doesn't explain what you get, but at least it's a first step that I think that it's very, very important. And then I think that in our type of research, one very important aspect of external validity is the recruitment of participants. So how we can be sure that those participants somehow represent what the target population think or how they would behave. And I think that that's another key consideration in the research that we usually conduct.
As you were recruiting participants, did you run into any barriers as you were recruiting?
Well, the barrier that you usually face when you use these, for example, social media recruitment, and it has happened to us also, for example, when we recruit, I don't know, parents of small children, and we want to discuss aspects related to healthy eating within the family and so on. Males are also are reluctant, so it's not easy to recruit males. So it's usually very easy to recruit females to being part of these type of studies and to talk about eating and healthy behavior and so on. But with males, it's always a little bit difficult. So in our case, what we did was to this specific advertisement, we targeted at males. So in general, what we see is that when we have these very general, so because that when you do this social media recruitment, so you just select your target population. So in our case, we say, for example, I don't know, Uruguayan people older than 18. So the software, Facebook software, automatically selects the participants that would see the advertisement, both in, for example, Facebook and Instagram. And usually what we get is that in the first, I don't know, couple of days or something like that, we get females, a lot of females answering the study and not many males. So what we usually do is to change the target. So we say, okay, just focus on males. So then the advertisement goes just for males. And of course it takes much longer to recruit males than females. But we usually have the same problem when we work with, recruiting parents in schools or health facilities. It's always difficult to capture men perception. I think that it's something related to our gender differences that it's difficult to overcome.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you again for sharing with us today. It was great to learn about your work and to learn more about external validity. At this point, I can pass it back over to Rachel.
Thank you very much for presenting to us today. Just a reminder, there'll be a short survey when I close the webinar, and then watch for an email later this week with a link to the recording, the handout, and your CEU certificate. As I mentioned, sadly, this is the last Journal Club of this series, but we will be planning to return with Journal Club this fall. I think we have one additional webinar on SNEB's calendar, but I'll also let you know that registration has opened for the virtual annual conference. So 3 days, almost 50 hours of programming during the conference. So please look at that information and share that. Obviously, as a virtual event, we can have attendees from all over the world. And then we are planning a deep dive session into the topics that are going to be discussed at conference in New Orleans. So that's August 26th and 27th. Obviously a smaller event, not a typical conference, but a more interactive series of sessions looking at the topics of raising resilience and reliance. So again, thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you online again soon.